Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're talking about jobs and their power in making a strong community. Last year, within a week after criminal charges were filed against police officers who arrested and transported Freddie Gray, the CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League wrote an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun that began, quote, "To heal our city, we cannot focus exclusively on law enforcement," end quote. It's striking to me that now, as one chapter in the law enforcement response to Freddie Gray's death has closed with those criminal charges being dropped, the National Urban League will gather in Baltimore next week. 13,000 people are expected to be here to discuss aspects of this theme: Save Our Cities, Education, Jobs, and Justice. The conference is an opportunity for urban leagues from across the country to gather and discuss solutions to income inequality, criminal justice reform, closing the achievement gap, and economic empowerment is one of the league's primary goals. Today we'll hear how the Greater Baltimore Urban League supports that mission, not only through job training and placement, but also with its brand new Raymond V. Haysbert Sr. Center for Entrepreneurship. More on that later. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says the unemployment rate in Baltimore is 7.6%, nearly double the state's overall rate. The U.S. Census Bureau found that unemployment reaches 30% in some Baltimore neighborhoods like Midtown, Upton, Jude Heights, and Greenmount West. On the other hand, data from the Census Bureau's 2012 American Community Survey shows that minority-owned businesses are on the rise. There are 8 million minority-owned firms in the U.S., a 38% increase since 2007. A report last year by American Express Open found that the number of women-owned businesses grew by 74% between 1997 and 2015, with the highest concentrations of Black women-owned businesses in Georgia, Illinois, and Maryland. The growth rate of Black women-owned businesses was 1.5 times the national average of business growth. Minorities, women, and veteran business owners can face unique challenges, including discrimination and financing. The Washington Post has reported that minority business owners pay interest rates on average nearly a third higher than the rates their white counterparts pay. So today we'll discuss the opportunities and challenges for small business owners and entrepreneurs in Baltimore, from financing to scaling up to networking. We'll hear what resources the Greater Baltimore Urban League provides to clients across the city. With me here in Studio A is J. Howard Henderson, president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League, who wrote that op-ed I quoted. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
Very glad to have you. And also, William Honablu, director of the Raymond V. Haysbert Sr. Center for Entrepreneurship. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Sheila.
I'm glad you are, too. Mr. Henderson, we also saw that one of the primary focuses after the unrest in Baltimore last April was on the lack of job opportunities in Baltimore. And you wrote that op-ed that sort of focused people on the need to focus not just on law enforcement as a response, but on the economic underpinnings. What do you think of Baltimore's response?
At this point, Baltimore has responded very well. As you know, when they started the One Baltimore Project, a lot of corporations stepped up and put money behind that. And so that's been very successful in terms of rolling it out. From the Greater Baltimore Urban League standpoint, we were very pleased to receive a grant from Wells Fargo to help us provide some actual training for targeted communities immediately following the Freddie Gray incident. Wells Fargo put $300,000 in terms of 3 organizations. And then it was a lot of community. You had to put your proposal in, then the community had to review the proposal, and then they selected the winners. We were fortunate to be one of those winners. And what we've been doing with our funding is to focus on Sandtown, Winchester area, Cherry Hill, and McGillivray Park, three communities in Baltimore that have the same kind of issues as the one that caused the Freddie Gray grew up in. And so we've been working with providing training for those individuals and getting them ready to go into the IT area. Because as you know, IT jobs in Baltimore are growing every day. And so in order for folks to be able to participate in those jobs, they need the proper training. So we've been doing training in that area for the last 5 or 6 months. And so it's been very successful, getting folks placed in jobs. And so that's been a good piece of it. But also,
I want to hear the also. Don't lose that thought. But can you tell us more about the results so far? I know it's early days yet in that kind of a training program. But you said you actually have already placed people in jobs.
Oh, no question about it. We have placed approximately about 30 some individuals in actual jobs. They went through our program, got qualified in A-plus certification, which is one of the first underpinning of moving up in the IT program.
So describe to me what kind of jobs these tend to be then, these 30 jobs that already you've placed somebody.
Well, I can tell you that what they've been able to do is provide working in the area of support for computer, in terms of, I'm not the expert in this, but I do know that they
feel free to jump in, William Hanablu, if you're more of an expert in what these jobs are.
Not necessarily an expert in what the jobs are, but a little bit familiar with the technology and the A-plus certification. It's one of the primary, as Mr. Henderson said, entry points for jobs in technology. And so these jobs tend to focus on assisting organizations and individuals in managing their technology at the base level. So rebooting or restructuring your hardware system, adding basic network components, mm-hmm. and working on some of the fundamental hardware, like the actual CPUs and motherboards, and going in, taking apart, and putting them back together. That's what these individuals are able to do with the A-plus certifications.
And so 30 people have been placed in jobs. Tell me about these jobs. Were they already existing before last April and going unfilled?
These were jobs that existed and were going unfilled. And because folks didn't have the proper training, so in order for them to fill those jobs, they had to have the proper skill sets. And so that's one of the things we did was work with the corporations who were looking for employee individuals to see what skill sets were necessary and work with them building those skill sets so that we could get the folks employed.
Before I let you pick up the point you were about to make, tell me what you see as the upside there. I mean, you've placed 30 people already. Do you see this as something that there's an ongoing appetite, that there are, do you think there are scores more jobs be trained for?
No question. There are scores of more jobs there. And what we've been doing this summer, even with our summer youth program, we have been training folks to be able, so they can participate, even though they're going there. These are high school students, but we've been providing them with some A-plus certification training. So we think this is the underpinning of a market for employment that we see that has to be a need in Baltimore for the next 30, 40 years. We think that when you look at the number of jobs in the metro area for IT types of employment, it's close to 150,000 jobs that are out there and that will be coming online within the next 10 or 15 years.
And William Hanablu, how long is the training to get to that entry-level job?
Depending on which pathway the individuals take, like, for example, our youth workers, they spend a summer, which is about 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. So some of these trainings, particularly the fundamental ones, you can get in them rather quickly to get the certification. But this is part of, as Mr. Henderson indicated, a longer-term strategy. Yeah. So understanding that this is the first entry point. And so as we expand our training opportunities, as we expand our training opportunities, we have more inroads for other people to come in behind that group. So when you have an A-plus, then you may move to your CNE or one of the other more advanced certifications, which opens up some slots behind you so that the people can get those the A-plus certification, and we can continue this pipeline into these jobs for the next 10 to 15 years.
That is William Hanablu of the Greater Baltimore Urban League here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here in the studio is J. Howard Henderson, CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League. You are welcome to be part of this conversation if you have some ideas about how Baltimore can heal economically at this time. We'd love to hear your suggestions. If you've had some dealings with the Greater Baltimore Urban League that you would like to share, you can call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. org. Mr. Henderson, I interrupted you to talk about training and hiring people for existing jobs, but I think that's not the main point you wanted to make.
Well, it was a very important point, but the main point I wanted to make is that Baltimore, you were saying in terms of where we are now as a city, I think we have identified the underlying issues within various communities in our city, and we know it's not just jobs, but it's education. And we understand that in order to be able to be ready to move into the economic and social mainstream in our society, we need to have education as a key component. We also know that, you know, health and wellness is a very serious issue in Baltimore when you think about the AIDS and all the other issues that are facing our community. Then when you look at housing is in stock in Baltimore. If you go to some of our neighborhoods, It's kind of sad to see this, the vacant homes that are in our neighborhoods. So we need the strategy that the city is trying to put in place to deal with the vacant homes has not worked as well as it should have worked. So I know hopefully that we're going to rethink that strategy and think about how we can get those vacant homes back on the market. So Baltimore has a lot of issues, like most major cities, but we are facing those issues, and we're making a difference in terms of coming up with some solutions to deal with those.
We're going to need to take a break in a minute, and before we do, I'd like to learn some of the history of the Greater Baltimore Urban League.
Okay.
Can you fill me in on that?
Yes, we were founded in 1924, so we've been around a number of years.
Getting close to a century.
Almost a century. In Baltimore, and we were founded for the simple fact that as African Americans were moving from the rural South to urban areas, like most cities, helping them to make that adjustment to urban living. And Baltimore, in terms of where we are now and where we were then, we were facing some of the same issues that we're facing in our community. The access to jobs, access to health care, access to quality housing. So some of the same issues that we were facing in 1924, we are now refacing those same issues in Baltimore. So the Baltimore Urban League has been out there for a number of years working towards trying to help African Americans to move into the social and economic mainstream. The only difference that we're facing now in terms of the quality of the people that are coming through our doors because of our educational system, young people are coming through our doors 18 to 25 who are functioning at a fifth and sixth grade level. That's just, you know.
You're talking about their reading skills, their writing skills?
Reading, writing skills. They're functioning at a fifth and sixth grade level.
I'm sorry?
And mathematics as well.
Mathematics as well.
So all these things are bringing real, have created a real undergirding of people who are being left out because of our educational system has failed so many young people in our community.
And you've been at the Urban League in Baltimore, am I right, about 15 years?
About 15 years, yes.
You've seen a change in the educational preparation in that time?
No question about it. I've seen that those folks who are coming through our doors looking for that second chance and trying to get on a pathway to success, they're functioning too low in terms of their educational skills. But the Greater Baltimore Urban League, we also have a strong Saturday leadership program that most folks don't know about. We have 100 and some young people participate in our program every year. And what we do at our Saturday leadership program, we serve over 49 neighborhoods in the city. And so what we're doing is trying to get young people to understand that so many opportunities are in Baltimore, but they haven't been made aware of those opportunities.
That's a wonderful thought on which to take a break, the idea that there are lots of opportunities, perhaps more than many young people even realize. We are going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a new entrepreneurship center that I've mentioned a couple times that the Greater Baltimore Urban League is opening. We're also going to meet a small business owner to tell us how she moved from an online only company to a brick-and-mortar location. You can be part of this conversation. What are you thinking as you hear about the opportunities that exist and the challenges, especially the educational challenges, that the Greater Baltimore Urban League sees? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email, midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Next week, the Greater Baltimore Urban League will hold a ribbon cutting for the Raymond V. Haysbert Senior Center for Entrepreneurship. The Haysbert Center will help those with ideas and vision and create business plans and help business owners expand their ventures. Also next week, the National Urban League Conference is taking place at the Baltimore Convention Center. The conference will include a job fair, a networking event, as well as the Small Business Matters Entrepreneurship Summit, where participants can qualify for a chance to win $10,000 to implement their business idea. With me in Studio A are J. Howard Henderson, President and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League, and William Honablu, Director of the League's of that new Raymond V. Haysbert Senior Center for Entrepreneurship that I mentioned. And joining us now is Lisa Phillips, owner of Celebrate Us. That's Celebrate Us with an extra E in the middle that she'll explain to us. It's a gift basket and event planning and hosting company. Celebrate Us has grown from an online-only business to a 3,000-square-foot space at East Point Mall in Dundalk. Lisa, welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to talk about Celebrate Us, but I keep mentioning the new Haysbert Center and haven't really given you a chance to tell us what it is. William Honablu, tell us about this new entrepreneurship center.
Oh, thank you, Sheila. The great thing, one of the great things about the Entrepreneurship Center is its name. We have the opportunity to name it after Raymond V. Haysbert Sr., who not only was the chairman of the Greater Baltimore Urban League's board of directors until his death in 2010, so for about 10 years or so, but he was also one of the major players in black business in Baltimore.
More Park Sausages, Mom.
More Park Sausages, Mom, please.
Please.
What a lot of people don't know, and I just recently found out, is that voice was actually Mr. Haysbert's voice. Right.
Oh, really?
Yes,
that's total news to me. I thought I had that jingle down pat. I didn't know that.
Yes. And so there one of the great parts about this, and I'm going to talk about the services from the Entrepreneurship Center, but I think explaining the naming, the rationale behind the naming puts it in its proper context. In addition to just being, you know, he was known as the Dean of Black Business in Baltimore, in addition to taking Park Sausages to one of the first publicly traded and largest African-American-owned businesses in the country, he also started the President's Roundtable in Baltimore. He started the Black Chamber of Commerce, also formed caterers, and some people didn't know that he was a Tuskegee Airman. We have hundreds of stories, and when people find out about the name, that they say, Mr. Haysbert, he touched my life. He gave me a shot. He wasn't a person who just, you know, stroke a check to someone to start their business, but he provided mentorship, guidance, and support to hundreds of businesses in the Baltimore area and nationally. And it's an honor to be able to serve in a center with that history behind it.
So how is the center going to continue his work?
That is a wonderful question. It's like I wrote it down for you. The way that we're going to continue his work is to do exactly what he did. We're going to work with entrepreneurs, whether you have an idea that could go in a different direction, whether you've been in business for a few years and trying to take it to the next level, or if you've been in business for a long time and you're looking to transition out. We want to be there to help you. Now, we're not doing everything. We do workshops for individuals on larger topics, like we recently did a workshop on strategic business planning, giving people an overview of kind of the ins and outs of what should be included in a business plan. We don't just do it from a theoretical perspective. We make sure that we talk about what actually happens in businesses from day to day. A lot of times people, you know, we talked off air about the focus on the internet. People can get, you know, a lot of their information from the internet, but there's something about experience. There's something about understanding that you need to take into consideration your personal and business life, because you don't have one without the other. helping entrepreneurs understand that the merger of those two things can actually be beneficial or it can be detrimental, but you have to think about it either way. We also do seminars where we take smaller groups of entrepreneurs and we sit down and they're basically work sessions. So if you have an application that you're putting in to, let's say, Department of Health and Mental Hygiene for some licensing, we sit down with a group of entrepreneurs who may be filling out a license for their minority business certification or another regulatory piece, and we all talk about what needs to be done there. And we get people involved and we bring experts to the table to make sure that you have relevant information for people who know what they're talking about. One of the greatest things is that between the partnership with the U.S. Economic Development Administration, a very generous engagement from the ABLE Foundation here in Baltimore and Wells Fargo, and in partnership with the National Urban League, the services that we offer are free. And that provides a lot of opportunity for micro businesses and very small businesses to engage, because a lot of them have questions, need resources, but don't have a lot of money.
So maybe I'm getting hung up on a piece of grammar that shouldn't bother me, but I notice you're using the present tense as you describe, we offer these services,
yes.
We do these. And I just said that you're about to open this entrepreneurship center, but it sounds to me like I'm out of date, like it's already functioning.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. What we did is we had a soft opening. There are individuals, there had been so much pent-up demand for entrepreneurial support and services in Baltimore that as we are preparing to open up and have our official ribbon cutting, we just couldn't keep turning people away. So what and there were some special projects like Wells Fargo and Celebrate Us. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Lisa will talk about that. Wells Fargo had a wonderful opportunity, a $10,000 grant for three finalists in Baltimore to renovate their spaces. Well, we're not just going to wait till after our ribbon cutting to sit down and work with them to make sure that they can take advantage of the bump in marketing and recognition. We got involved. And that, again, the legacy of Mr. Haysbert. Mr. Haysbert didn't wait for the situation to be right, for the context to be right, for all the money to be in. He said, let's make it happen. We support the community. We get engaged. We make changes. He took the Urban League's motto of empowering communities and changing lives very seriously, and we do as well.
That is William Honnablue, the director of the new Raymond V. Haysbert Senior Center for Entrepreneurship at the Greater Baltimore Urban League. Here on Midday on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us here is J. Howard Henderson, president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League, and Lisa Phillips, an entrepreneur and business owner. You can be part of this conversation if you are curious about how this works, if you have an idea about how it could work in your life or something that you see. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. So Lisa Phillips, what is Celebrate Us?
So Celebrate Us, we are an event, an occasion, and pretty much a production company. Yes. You bring me your occasion and we actually put on a production. And the reason I say a production is because what we do, it's more fulfilling and more memorable than just an event planning company. I mean, we do a lot of activities that really help to shape your memories. And so we are a production company. If you're having a baby shower, a birthday party, a 50th anniversary, you know, it's too significant to just call it an event. And so we take it from an event to a production.
And are most of your clients individuals or families, or do you also do business events?
We haven't gotten requests for businesses as of yet, but we're focused on the families for right now, and the different milestones from baby showers to birthday parties to anniversaries, retirements.
How did you come up with this idea? How did you decide to make a business about this?
So, in 2011, I was in undergrad. I was a non-traditional student. I refocused on my education later in my life and decided to go to school.
So you were an undergrad where?
At at the time, I was at Morgan State University.
Uh-huh.
And so I had a marketing class. At the same time, I have a grandson. And so we were preparing for my grandson.
You don't have a grandson.
Yes, I have a fabulous grandson.
Listeners, I wish you could see. I mean, I was like surprised when she said she was a non-traditional student because she looks pretty much like an undergrad to me. But anyway,
wow,
I interrupt.
I'll take that. I'll take that.
So you had a grandson. At the same time, you were taking a marketing class. And
yes.
Then?
So we were preparing for my grandson's christening. And so I decided to take care of both of those milestones because it was my final exam project for my marketing class. And I said, well, you know, how can I maximize and optimize both of these milestones with one, you know, event on my behalf? And I decided to do a gift basket. Had never done gift baskets before, but always have been creative. And so I did a christening gift basket. I'm standing in front of the class doing my presentation, and my professor said to me, you need to speed this up. And I said, why? What's wrong? She said, you have an order. You have six orders. And I said, I have six orders for what? She said, there's a sign-in sheet that went around the class, and there are six orders for that gift basket. And so I said, I don't do this as a business. And she said, I think you do. And so it was just wonderful because, it, you know, this was just a gesture for my grandson's, you know, to commemorate my grandson's christening that blossomed into
a
business.
That's a great story. That's a great founding story.
Yes.
of a business. You were nodding extremely vigorously, which is partly, I think, just because you're an energetic person. But when William Honablu was talking about the services that the Greater Baltimore Urban League provides to entrepreneurs and budding entrepreneurs, you were vigorously nodding. Have you used these services, or what's your connection?
Absolutely. So I was very fortunate to be one of the finalists for Wells Fargo store renovation. And so as a part of that, as an added value, Wells Fargo brought in the National Urban League to also give some guidance to small businesses. And so small businesses are challenged with just trying to keep the lights on. And so a lot of the best practices that you need, a lot of the business principles that you need to apply to make your businesses run more efficiently, that's the added value that the National Urban League brought to us immediately. And, you know, just as William said, you know, there's a sense of urgency. I even get requests and messages on social media, how can you help me start a business? And so it's wonderful to have a platform that the National Urban League, you know, has for people who they just simply have an idea.
I'd like to walk through, using you as an example, some of the challenges that a budding business has, but I also want to keep up with some of the emails we're getting about sort of other aspects of the Urban League. Chrissy wrote us, is better access to or expansion of public transportation a component in trying to improve ease of job placement for inner city residents? Mr. Henderson, I'll throw that to you.
Yeah, that's a major challenge because we had a company out in White Marsha came to us and they had 150 job openings and we were not able to fill those jobs because of the transportation challenges. So transportation in the greater Baltimore region is certainly an issue, and it's one that I think that as they look at in terms of new lines going in, hopefully they will take into consideration how does one get to that those jobs that have been developed outside of the Baltimore City area, and how does one get there because shift work and there's no way to get there and get back. So that transportation is certainly a challenge. As they look at the new Port Covington project, one of the things that they're looking at is making sure that transportation is not a challenge as a part of that project.
That we had another emailer who asked specifically about Port Covington. You talked about the prospect of, for example, that you can see a lot of tech support jobs in the region. They're wondering what you see as the prospects that Port Covington, what kind of job prospects there will be for the very people who turn to the Urban League for help.
You know, Sheila, that's one of the issues that I really don't want to get into now because I've been tasked by the president of the council. I'm chairing a task force who's coming together, putting together a community benefits agreement mm-hmm. that we should be sharing with the president of the council, Jack Young, within the next week or so.
You think you should share it with the chairman of the council before you tell me on the air?
I think so.
You're very traditional.
I know.
But you'll talk to us about it after you present it.
I'd be happy to sit down and talk to you about it.
Okay. Lisa Phillips, what was the biggest challenge you faced in starting your business?
So the biggest challenge, a lot of people, especially budding entrepreneurs, you know, they think that they need money in order to start their businesses, and that's the biggest misnomer. You need customers, and so the biggest challenge for any entrepreneur is, how do I get customers? How do I get returning customers? And so when I started my company, of course, I was a naive business, you know, entrepreneur myself, and I thought that I needed money. To start business, money plays a role, but you need to have a solid customer acquisition plan on how you're going to gain customers. And so when I started my business, I created a customer acquisition plan first. And so,
how?
So the way you create a customer acquisition is that you have to have an acute awareness of your customers' needs. And so remember, if you fill a need, you'll always have a customer. If you solve a problem for a customer, you'll always have one. And so as I built my customer acquisition plan, I looked at, okay, I'm going to build this business. So what problem am I solving for the customer in order to get them to buy, in order to get them to book? And so that's where I started with my platform, with developing that customer acquisition plan.
So did you do some kind of a survey, or how did you answer the question of what problem I'm solving?
So I'm very fortunate. I don't like to tout about being in business school, because I don't want people to think that you have to go to business school in order to be an entrepreneur, because you do not. But I'm very fortunate. I'm pursuing my MBA. And so a lot of the tools that we're learning in my MBA program is how to understand why you're in business. You're in business to gain customers. And so, that's the point, to gain customers, to retain customers, and to get new customers.
William Honeyblue, we need to take a break here in just mm-hmm. a second, but you've been nodding so vigorously as Lisa's describing customer acquisition. I mean, is this something that rings true to you for other would-be entrepreneurs, if that's where they need to focus? And if so, how do you help them do that?
It absolutely needs to be a critical focus of anybody who is in business or starting a business. One of the ways that we help is that we have a couple of tools that we walk people through and get them to focus on their customer base and what problems they're solving. A lot of entrepreneurs, I won't say the majority, but a lot of them come to the table because there's a thing that they can do. I am a good cook, or I am a good writer, or I am a good this, that, or the third. The problem is that they haven't taken a look at how does that benefit the people that they want to buy from them. And so we help them change the focus from what is it that you can provide to why would you provide it. The two questions I tell every person that comes and sits across from me is, you need to be able to answer these two. Who are you, and why does anyone care? Because if you cannot answer those two questions, then you probably won't be in business very long.
And that's exactly what I did. You know, think about it. My business started with gift baskets. How do you get people to care about gift baskets? And you know how you do that? You make them care about their occasions. You make them care about being a thoughtful person. And what can I do to be a more thoughtful person? Oh, instead of getting a gift card, let me get a gift basket. And so one of the things that I've been able to effectively do is make people care about gift baskets.
Okay, on that note, we're going to take a quick break here. Who are you, and why does anyone care? Something to think about. You can join this conversation about entrepreneurship, especially among Blacks and minorities. If you have started a business, we would love to hear what advice you would give to be successful. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with J. Howard Henderson, President and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League, with William Honablu, Director of the Urban League's new Raymond V. Haysbert Senior Center for Entrepreneurship, and with entrepreneur, business owner Lisa Phillips. We're talking about creating jobs and what that can do for the community. You're welcome to join this conversation. Customers, are you more likely to seek out a minority-owned business when you need to buy something? Is there some particular experience that makes that the case for you? You can call us at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. So, Lisa Phillips, you made it very clear that your first hurdle you realized was not to find the money. It was to line up the customers.
Yes.
But at some point, you did have to find money.
Yes.
How did you do that?
So, William mentioned about a business plan. And so your business plan is your roadmap. And so in order to get members of the financial community to take notice of you, you have to have a full-throated, comprehensive, effective business plan. And I was very fortunate that I had that in tow when it was time for me to look for financing. And the points that financing entity is looking for is, you know, they need to be able to look at that business plan and see, you know, how are you going to make money? You know, what is your growth potential? And so I was very effective in having what we call in business school different business verticals. So, you know, I knew when I did my business plan that I was going to go, you know, I was going to go from gift baskets to a whole nother business vertical, which is I have something called Build-A-Basket workshops. And so when I'm not selling baskets, I'm being paid to teach it. And so when it was time for me to get financing, they saw a really, really very direct, comprehensive path forward on how I was going to grow my business. And then came the occasions. And so I went from, you know, the gift baskets as a whole, but then the teaching of gift basket building, and now taking the gift basket concept and expanding it to
events.
Occasions and events.
Occasions.
Exactly.
William Honablu, what are the most common mistakes that you see new entrepreneurs making?
Some of the mistakes include listening to people who say, no one's ever going to look at your business plan anyway. So you have a lot of entrepreneurs who come to the table. It's like, well, I just need something to show them, show my financier, show my potential investor, just so that they can see it. And it's like, no, you need a roadmap in order for you to become successful. What some of them don't understand is that the business plan actually needs to focus on what your resources are, how you're getting the clients, how you're getting the customers. Because whether it's an investor, whether it's a grant, or whether it's a loan, the people want to know that you're going to be able to use the money appropriately. One of the things that I tell my kids, and also tell entrepreneurs, is that if you have a hole in your pocket, me giving you more change is not going to make you richer. So what we need to do is to take a look at your business, sew up the holes in your pocket so that the money that comes in through your clients, you can keep that and you'll have it so that you can provide or repay your loans or to give your investors their value added or the return that they're looking for. When people are looking for financing, there are a couple of things that they need to remember. Their personal credit is important. To say that, you know, well, I've made some mistakes on my personal credit, but I wouldn't do that on business. Why would anybody believe that? That may be true, but why would anybody want to risk their lending portfolio on the fact that you may or may not do the same things that you've done in your personal life? The revenue that you're getting, is your revenue expectation reasonable? Does it make sense for the industry, the location, and your business model? Do you have the experience to say that your revenue and all of these other expectations are reasonable? And making sure that you have a team of people engaged. And a lot of this stuff happens before you get money, before you need money. If you can't answer these questions, again, going back to who are you and why do you care? Why does anyone care? Your banker wants to know that you are a successful entrepreneur or have the potential to be successful and that you will pay the money back and the interest. Your investor wants to know that there's going to be a return on investment. And so that's who you are and why they should care.
Why they should care.
And also, you can't take for granted your customer's knowledge. Customers consumers are very knowledgeable and very sophisticated. And so as entrepreneurs, you're also competing against the internet. And so you can't pull the wool over the eyes of customers. And so knowledge of industry is very important for entrepreneurs. And so you may be able to bake a cake and you may be able to make it look very pretty, but what is it that you know about food safety? What is it that you know about your industry leaders who's winning at baking? And so a lot of times people fail in businesses because they take for granted that because they can do that one thing, that that's enough. No, you need to have knowledge about ingredients and knowledge about best practices and knowledge about who's, you know, what worked in the past and what no longer works. Customers appreciate information, good information.
Dale has called us from Greenmount West. Dale, welcome to Midday.
Right, good afternoon. I wanted to make a point. I've been in business for over 20 years. I was in the service sector, lawn care and janitorial services. And many of my clients were government agencies. And I had long-term contracts and on-call contracts. But in the last 8 to 9 years, there's been a real shift in the procurement practices where even in with going against the best interest of what they put out in their procurement documents on what they expect this project to cost, they go strictly lowball. So you get a vendor in there that may knock out a vendor that's been providing a service for years, get knocked out, and they get a substandard service that costs the taxpayers or whatever entity it is. And then secondly, the issue of workman comp. I never had a claim against my insurance company. Every year, my workman comp went up about $1,000 every year. So there's some barriers that you know, you can have a business plan, you can have best practices, but there have been some systematic changes on how things are done, and people expect nowadays for you to do a $10 job for $8, and they're good with it. If they're coming out on the good side of the deal, there has to be some understanding that if we want a fair and equitable society, whatever goods or services you're providing, you should get paid fairly.
Dale, I appreciate you putting those on the table, probably more than we can go into depth with in the few minutes we have, but thank you very much for those calling. Mr. Henderson, J. Howard Henderson, what would you say to Dale on those points about that it's gotten harder to get a contract that can actually keep a small business going?
There's no question about it, but the point being that most of these contracts and RFPs that they send out from the federal side and from state side, they're looking at, you know, not always that, you know, they're looking for the lowest bidder, basically. And it's not so much as the track record, as Dale was saying, folks who had a successful track record, but they're looking for other folks and how they can save a dollar in this economy. So it's tough out there. I can understand that. Wilm, you may want to comment on that.
I would actually like to comment on that, only because I've dealt with contracts with government agencies. Entrepreneurs, you need to be flexible. You need to be flexible, and you have to create other verticals. Because if you're just depending on being one-dimensional with dealing with just contracts, you're not going to survive. And so you have to be flexible, and you have to be innovative yourself. And when you're not doing that one thing, you have to figure out a way how to get paid to do it in another avenue to do it.
Interesting. Yeah. Kirby Fowler from the Downtown Partnership has phoned us. Kirby Fowler, welcome back to Midday. We're real tight on time. What is your main point?
Sure. Thank you, Sheila. I just want to let you know that downtown employers and residents are very excited for next week's national convention, and just wanted to ask Howard, first of all, what else could the corporate community do to help out with the conference and your initiatives generally?
Well, Kirby, thank you for the questions.
Thank you, Kirby, for calling in. Did I pay you to make that call?
Hey, I don't want to know about it.
No question about it. The corporate community in Baltimore has really stepped up in terms of assisting us to bring the national conference to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I can tell you when the mayor and I first met and Mark brought our national president, Mark Morial, to town, and we talked about the possibility of bringing a conference here. This was immediately after the Freddie Gray issue because they had selected another city. And so what we did was we went and lobbied the National, I did personally, and Stephanie stepped up and put her resources behind it. And the corporate community in Baltimore has really stepped up. I have two great co-chairs. We have Calvin Butler from BG&E and Kim Horn.
Well, Kirby Feller just asked, what else can they do?
Well, right now, Kirby, I know you say, what else can you do? Once this conference is over, then we'll be looking at continual support of the Urban League in Baltimore. Since we have now reintroduced ourselves, I think, and rebranded ourselves so that the corporate community know that we're here and what we're doing, I think that the corporate community will step up even more to assist us in some of the projects and programs that we have at the Urban League.
In the short term as well, encourage all of your employees, all of your partners, and everyone else to register for some of the free events that we're having and some of the paid ones, because the quality of information that's being brought to bear is just phenomenal. And I think it would be a value add for people across the Baltimore region.
So tell me, we have like a minute where you can tell me something about one or two of these free events.
Well, since I'm the director of entrepreneurship, let's talk about the Small Business Matters Conference, with the Small Business Matters Summit. On August 6th, we're having our Small Business Matters Summit, which is a special track underneath the larger Urban League Conference. We're going to have incredible speakers from across the nation. So, for example, I'm moderating a panel on How Did I Make It? This is for the small business owner who is either in the nascent stage or someone who's thinking about becoming a small business owner. And these are people the panelists are people who've done it, who've developed curricula, attorneys, and other people who can give you step-by-step instructions on how to avoid some of the challenges that they faced, how they resolve some of the challenges, but also taking a look at how do you identify an opportunity and maximize it in the context of your business. And it's free. I want to reiterate that it's free because, again,
so even if you're not registered for the overall national conference, you can register for this.
Yes,
you don't have to register; you just attend. We have
that's on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
August 6th.
But beginning on that Thursday, we will be having our exhibit hall will be open. Mm-hmm. That's open to the general public. We're going to have over 75 employers there hiring, and look for folks both nationally and some locally. And so, and then we have our community day on that Saturday, mm-hmm. which is a major event where Mayor Stephanie Rollins Blake normally gives away her backpacks, and Kevin Lyles, if he normally gives away his backpack, they have combined with the Urban League, and we're gonna have backpack giveaways to all the kids in Baltimore with school supplies and so forth. So stop by, and visit us beginning Thursday at the Convention Center. And our exhibit hall will be open to the general public.
With all this going on, I'm doubly grateful that you all took time to come and talk about it, because obviously you've got a lot to do. I want to thank you, J. Howard Henderson, President and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Urban League. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And William Honablu, Director mm-hmm. of the Raymond V. Haysbert Senior Center for Entrepreneurship. Congratulations.
And thank you.
Thanks for telling us about it. And Lisa Phillips, owner of Celebrate Us. Thanks. It was great meeting you.
Thank you. Great meeting you.
More information about next week's convention, including a schedule of events, can be found at conference.gbul.org. We'll have a link to that on the midday page at wypr.org. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday. We'll talk about the challenges that refugee students face when they're resettled in Baltimore. Meanwhile, have a great weekend. I'm Sheila Kast.